From the farm field in Logan County, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's the 22nd day of October, 2019. In this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Don Day will join us to talk about the weather forecast and what it looks like for the Midwest, and we'll also hear from the state statisticians and an update of crop progress in Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota. And we close out our time together. The folks at Harvest Public Media will take us through ASF, African swine fever, and how U.S. pork producers are preparing themselves for a potential outbreak of that particular disease in this nation. And we'll do all of that right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Look us up, listen to us on demand at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, on this Tuesday afternoon, here are the numbers as they finished in Chicago, but I'm recording right at 1 o'clock because I'm in the farm field working this afternoon in Logan County and don't really have time to actually get the settlement prices in for the day. December corn, though, at the close or near it at 387, about a quarter lower. The March at 399, a half lower. The May contract at 406, three quarters lower. July down three quarters at 412 and a quarter. December of next year at 409 and a quarter, up a quarter. Soybeans in the November, two higher. January up 2.5 at 949 and a quarter. I should say that November 19 contract at 935 and a half. Again, not a settlement price, but a closing or close to it price. March contract around 1 o'clock in the afternoon at 960 and three quarters, a penny and three quarters higher. May contract up 1 3/4. And next year's November, about 974 and three quarters. Going into the close, a penny and a half higher. The bean oil futures at $30.89, 41 cents higher. The bean meal at 307, down 50 cents. Hard red winter wheat in the July contract at 452 and a half, 3.5 lower. The July soft red down 2 3/4 at 435. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished up the October at 109.70, $1.25 lower. That's actually going into the close. December at 113.67 and a half, down 20 cents. Feeder cattle up a nickel for the day at 143.47 and a half, in November at 143.32 and a half, 47 and a half higher. Lean hogs at $65.55, down $2.30. Some of the outside markets, crude oil about 74 cents higher. Ethanol futures almost unchanged. Heating oil around unchanged as well. As is the gasoline, actually it's about 0.5 cents lower, so it's at $1.60 and 1/10 cents. Natural gas is 3 9/10 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 77 points in the 1 o'clock hour. The U.S. dollar at 97.06 is up 0.015, and the gold futures at that hour trading $1,483.30, up 90 cents. Now, Wayne Nelson was kind enough to join us early to talk about the commodity markets. Hey, Wayne, thanks for doing that today. I appreciate it. How are things there in New Market, Indiana?
Well, we're pretty quiet around here today. We got enough rain that it's probably going to be tomorrow before we get really active in the fields again. Our beans are probably over 80% done in our area here, and the last ones are the second half of June, and they're still a little bit green as far as that, so some guys waiting on those, and we'll probably see some corn being started in earnest here tomorrow as things get dry enough again. You know, and that's going to be, we're looking at 6 to 10 days of probably pretty good harvest weather here, and that's probably what's keeping a cap on the corn market today.
Yeah, so I drove this morning over to Gleason Farms. That's about 70 miles or so. Most of it is cross-country. For the first 43 miles, I didn't see any combines running at all. Most of the beans were gone. Beans started to show up in that last 20, 25 miles again. And I did come across four combines, including the one that's running here at Gleason Farms, by the time I got here. But everything was pretty quiet, so they're waiting to get into the corn, I suppose, because it was planted so darn late. Just an update here. I think what'll happen with some of the corn, and I'll make this commentary because it is my own field here, that the corn, you know, was planted late. This one was not too bad, May 18th, but trying to control weeds was very difficult, and I think that probably took maybe 10 or 15 bushels off of this field, and that's going to be something that is already built into the yields that USDA has been collecting. But we'll see how all of that plays out, because water hemp and other weeds that get big just can't easily be controlled by herbicides, and the timing this year was just really difficult, Wayne, for farmers to get a hold of.
Yeah, well, of course, late, the very wet conditions always strive for weeds to do better, and your compaction level also causes more weeds to come up and harder to control. So you're very, very right on that and seeing what it's doing. So, and as far as the moisture, we're not very far along on corn harvest over here because the guys that are going out are finding that most of the corn is still above 24-25% moisture, and they're just not wanting to, they're trying to get another week or two in the field to come down and that way. But, that is a big deal that way. But, sort of the talk about the Chinese going to allow the private processors and that to come in and buy maybe 10 million metric tons of beans, that was a real big deal before the break. But after the break, it seemed like it really quieted down, and they wanted to see actual purchases rather than just hear about it. So, we really settled back, just like you told us, and how the trade was going. And then also on the crop progress, why we're a little farther along on the beans than what they're expecting by about 5% yesterday too, Todd.
Were you surprised that the trade didn't trade longer on the potential purchases for soybeans? And what does it tell you that they didn't?
Well, I think that basically along the way, we need to see things more than just sort of rumors, I think, is partially what's going on. We've heard, Kudlow basically make the comment that we're making progress, but there's still some real big things to come into, and that scared us some along the way. And also the fact that as we're just looking at things here, it's one of those things, are they going to buy enough to get through to Brazil's harvest? And then maybe they'll stall and won't sign something on this agreement. And I think that backfired a little bit in how they were looking at it. One of the things was we were looking for more pork also, and there was talk of hogs being limit up today. And, of course, as you said, they were down like $2. So that was sort of something that sort of fell against us too.
What do you think USDA will do with that November crop production and World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate report? It's due out the 8th of November, so it's still a couple of weeks away now. But that one, I assume, all the trade is looking forward to.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, that's going to be the big number to sort of take us on in. We were a little disappointed that they weren't going to include South Dakota and some other areas in their resurvey as to see what the snow and everything really accomplished. We saw pictures today on one of our news wires that showed into the barley laying flat up in those areas and saying it's going to be hard to harvest. But I think that I think it's going to be hard pressed for the government to lower as much as some of the farmers think it should be. We don't know as Cordonnier puts his stuff out, he's about 5 to 6 bushel below the U.S. government. And then the Brophy figures, which are generally 25 bushels over the national yield, are coming in somewhat looking like we should see a couple bushel reduction. But we don't always see that in the October report, and that's really the same as what the November report's going to be this year.
Now, given that, I have heard some really good yields coming out of parts of Iowa. How about you?
Yes, I think there's some very good yields there in Iowa, depending on which part you're hearing from, and there's some others that are down. We saw a lot of notice yesterday that there's parts of Nebraska that are having some disease problems and some of that, so that Nebraska might not end up being quite as big as what it's estimated now, but Iowa is being the spoiler as far as making this rally stay back for a while.
Any final comment on the livestock before I let you go?
Well, I think, we could really use some good purchases right now, but we've got a lot of livestock coming on. It's ready. We were ramped up for the idea that we were going to sell the Chinese a lot of pork at this point in time, and that would be really good. We just want this negotiations to go well and get this signed and get a lot of pork moving out of this country.
Hey, thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Look us up. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can find us at WILLAG.org. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 86% of the corn crop around the nation has matured, 97% is the rolling five-year average. Just 30% of the crop has been harvested normally by this time, over the last 5 years, that is. where usually about 47% harvested. The condition of the corn crop this week is 45% good, 11% excellent. That's 1 percentage point better than last week at 44 and 11. Soybeans dropping leaves around the nation now at 89%, or rather at 94%. The rolling five-year average is 97%, and 46% of the crop has been harvested. Usually 64% of that crop is in the bin by this time. Around the nation, 45% of the crop is in good condition, 9% in excellent. Now, here are updates from the state statisticians in Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa.
This is Brad Medlock, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, with the weekly Iowa Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending October 20th, 2019. Field conditions throughout Iowa improved, allowing farmers 5.1 days suitable for field work during the week ending October 20th, 2019. Field work activities included chopping silage, applying fertilizer and manure, and harvesting hay, seed corn, soybeans, and corn for grain. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 0% very short, 1% short, 78% adequate, and 21% surplus. Subsoil moisture condition was rated 0% very short, 2% short, 78% adequate, and 20% surplus. 87% of the corn crop has reached maturity, 3 weeks behind last year and over 2 weeks behind the five-year average. 15% of the crop has been harvested for grain, 11 days behind average. Corn condition rated 66% good to excellent. 94% of the soybean crop has begun dropping leaves or beyond, 9 days behind average. Over 30% of the state's expected soybean crop was harvested during the week ending October 20th, 2019. This brought the total harvested to 48% statewide, 4 days ahead of last year but 5 days behind average. This marks the first time the 2019 soybean crop has been ahead of the 2018 soybean crop. Harvest of last year's crop was also behind average due to wet field conditions. Soybean condition rated 65% good to excellent. The third cutting of alfalfa hay is nearly complete at 97%, almost 3 weeks behind average. Pasture condition improved from the previous week to 50% good to excellent, which was the highest rating since the first week of August. Feedlots remain muddy. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Brad Medlock.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. I am reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending Sunday, October 20. Cool temperatures continued across Illinois last week, but rainfall was nearly zero. Farmers used last week to harvest corn and soybeans and also to plant winter wheat. Temperatures averaged 51 degrees across the prairie state and ranged from 1.5 to 4 degrees below normal for the week. Rainfall averaged just 3/100ths of an inch. There was an average of 6.1 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture levels were reported as 6% very short, 16 short, 72 adequate, and 6% surplus. Subsoil moisture was reported as 7% very short, 15 short, 72 adequate, and 6% surplus. The Illinois soybean crop was dropping leaves on 93% of acres, compared to 98 last year and 97 for the five-year average. 52% of acres are now harvested, compared to 68 normally. The condition of the Illinois soybean crop was reported as 18% very poor to poor, 38 fair, and 44% good to excellent, nearly unchanged from last week. Corn is now mature on 88% of acres. That compares to 100% 1 year ago and 99% normally. 36% of acres have been harvested, compared to 80% last year and 70% normally. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was reported as 19% very poor to poor, 35% fair, and 46% good to excellent, slightly better than 1 week ago. 63% of winter wheat has been planted for harvest next year, compared to 51% 1 year ago and 53% normally. 30% of wheat acres have emerged, compared to 27% normally. Pasture conditions were rated 23% very poor to poor, 44% fair, and 33% good to excellent, nearly unchanged from 1 week ago. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loft, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with a weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending October 20th, 2019. Drier conditions prevailed this week, slightly increasing the number of days suitable for fieldwork to 3.7. Drier weather and cooler than normal temperatures allowed fields to dry somewhat, but the moisture content of crops is still measuring above optimal percents. Field activities for the week mostly revolved around harvesting crops. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 0% very short, 0% short, 53% adequate, and 47% surplus. Subsoil moisture conditions were rated 0% very short, 0% short, 55% adequate, and 45% surplus. 89% of the corn crop was mature, that's 18 days behind last year and 10 days behind normal. Corn harvested for grain reached 11% complete, that's 17 days behind last year and 13 days behind the average. Corn harvested for silage reached 90% this week, that's 12 days behind average. The corn condition was rated 53%, good to excellent, a slight improvement from the previous week. Nearly all soybeans have dropped their leaves, that's 6 days behind normal. 42% of the soybean crop had been harvested, that's 2 weeks behind average. The soybean condition was rated 53%, good to excellent, remaining steady when compared to the previous week. Dryable beans harvested reached 68% this week, that's 26 days behind average. Sunflower harvest finally kicked off this week, and the sunflower condition rated 68%, good to excellent, declining from the previous week. Potatoes harvested reached 90%, that's 10 days behind normal. Sugar beet harvest was 47% complete, that's 13 days behind average, and the sugar beet condition was rated 81%, good to excellent. Pasture condition remained steady at 53%, good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Midwest. Up next, African swine fever has been infecting its way through the pig herds of Asia. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports that while the disease is not yet here, the U.S. pork industry is preparing for a possible crisis.
African swine fever infected China in August 2018, and since then, it's devastated the world's largest pig herd. And that's got pork producers here worried. So in September, 14 U.S. states and the federal government held a four-day simulation exercise to test their preparedness.
You're in charge. What do you want? You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well.
On day two of the simulation, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Negg took a break from the role-playing at the State Emergency Operations Center near Des Moines to talk to reporters about how it was going. He said the simulation poked some holes in the plans, which is exactly the point. And he said, as the nation's number one pork-producing state, Iowa has a critical role.
If we're a leader in production, we ought to be a leader in how we respond.
The exercise tested how states would get the first samples to the U.S. Department of Agriculture lab on the East Coast, and how to stop trucks moving pigs, feed, and manure. Amanda Lutjens joined the exercise from Christensen Farms, where she's the animal welfare auditor. The network of hog farms includes sites in Minnesota, Nebraska, Illinois, and Iowa.
We are spending a lot of time and energy working on these plans that all of us hope we never have to use.
She says they keep track of every person, pig, and truck that comes and goes from each of the 400 Christensen-affiliated farms. But there's no way to know whether the preparations they're making will ultimately prove useful if the virus gets here.
We also understand this is a new and evolving beast, so it's going to be changing.
To be clear, African swine fever is nowhere in the Western Hemisphere, but it could arrive on any plane from an infected country.
It won't come across our land borders unless it first gets into a different country.
That's Iowa State University veterinary medicine professor Jim Roth.
The major concern is people and products from positive countries, and there are more and more positive countries all the time.
Roth participated in the simulation from USDA's incident headquarters in Maryland. He says Asia has provided a sobering reality check. From China, the virus has spread to North Korea, Vietnam, Laos, Myanmar, and the Philippines.
We've learned a lot from what they've done in those other countries. What we've learned is they haven't been able to stop it, so we need to really be prepared.
And even while the U.S. was running its hypotheticals in September, the disease spread to South Korea, a country considered almost as prepared as the United States. This newscast says that the disease has been confirmed and explains it's nearly 100% lethal to pigs and has prompted government officials to launch efforts to contain it. 2 weeks after the simulation and the South Korean announcement, I caught up with Ross and his colleague, veterinary pathologist Kyun Jin Yoon. They pieced together what happened in South Korea and what it implies for the readiness of the United States. Farmers expect to see sick pigs at times. South Korean producers were coached to monitor for specific symptoms. Yoon says those didn't always show up.
Immediately, people recognize that the clinical signs that the textbook describes is not always there.
So now, and for U.S. producers, Roth says don't wait for additional signs if a pig has a fever or stops eating.
The message is call a veterinarian right away.
But Roth and Yoon agree that should the United States become positive for African swine fever, pork dumplings and bacon could become scarce worldwide.
The world is going to have to reckon with a shortage of pork. And how do we do that?
On the other hand, planners recognize that consumers here might lose interest in pork if there's a deadly pig disease. That would cause the opposite problem, a glut of cheap ham and sausage in the U.S. Precautions remain strong. Some swine shows and events have been modified or canceled. Oklahoma recently became the 23rd state to ban feeding cooked food waste to pigs, and the USDA has brigades of beagles sniffing for contraband salami at airports. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Now let's check the weather forecast. Don Day with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, left us this update.
Taking a look at the last week and a half of October, it looks like certainly some cold fall-like conditions will dominate a large swath of the United States. This is going to be especially true over the northern plains. There's still going to be some areas of rain, snow showers, wind, and cold temperatures for the Dakotas, Minnesota. And then some of that cold, windy pattern is going to be moving into portions of the central and eastern Corn Belt. Now, the chances of rain will be in those northern areas early, but we do see an area of rain breaking out across portions of Oklahoma, Texas, into Missouri, then across central and northern areas of Illinois into Indiana. This is going to be especially true as we get into late Thursday night, Friday, into early Saturday. So we could have some harvest delays across Missouri, portions of Illinois, and Indiana with that system. After that system goes through, it's generally going to be a cool and drier stretch of weather for the following week. Temperatures are going to be pretty chilly across the Midwest and Upper Plains, but the heavier moisture will then shift into the southeastern parts of the United States, into the eastern portions of the Delta, the Gulf Coast, and along the eastern seaboard. Heading to the other side of the globe, down south of the equator, the forecast is still a little bit on the dry side for many areas of Brazil and Argentina, at least here for the next few days. Although, rain chances for central and southern Brazil, as well as central and northern Argentina, will be improving as we look ahead into next week.
Well, thanks, of course, go to Don Day. He is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, for that update of the weather forecast for the growing regions across the Midwest. He helps us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.